Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 8, Text 2, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So you can read that out, Chapter 8, Text 2. Is there any other table so you can put the book on? I read the verse in Sanskrit and Adiyagya tatam kotra dehi spin vajvasudana prayara kale chakatam geosi niyatakadihi. Who is the Lord of sacrifice?
Maybe I should read verse 1. I just opened it on that page. I read verse 1 instead. The first page I opened, it was all for quotes.
Chapter 8, Text 1. Arjuna Uvacha, King Tad Brahma, King Adhyatma, King Karma Purushottama, Adhi Bhutanja, King Bhutam, Adhi Daivam, Kimuchate. Arjuna inquired, O my Lord, O Supreme Person, what is Brahman? What is the Self? What are furtive activities? What is this material manifestation? And what are the demigods? Please explain this to me.
I guess I'll read the purport in English because we have quite a few devotees who don't understand Tamil. We have some who don't understand English or Tamil.
Arjuna inquired, O my Lord, O Supreme Person, what is Brahman? What is the Self? What are creative activities? What is there? Material manifestation. What is this material manifestation and what are the demigods? Please explain this to me. Purport. In this chapter, Lord Krishna answers different questions from Arjuna, beginning with what is Brahman? The Lord also explains karma, fruitive activities, devotional service, and yoga principles, and devotional service in its pure form. The Srimad Bhagavatam explains that the Supreme Absolute Truth is known as Brahman, Paramatma, and Paramatma. In addition, the living entity, the individual soul, is also called Brahman. Arjuna also inquires about Atma, which refers to body, soul, and mind. According to the Vedic dictionary, Atma refers to the mind, soul, body, and senses also. Arjuna has addressed the Supreme Lord as Purushottam, Supreme Person, which means that he was putting these questions not simply to a friend, but to the Supreme Person, knowing him to be the Supreme Authority, able to give definitive answers. So we may wonder, what's this got to do with me? What is the relevance of this to me? I'm sitting here in Ceylon, Tamil Nadu, and these questions, what is Brahman, what is the Self, what are fruitive activities, what is the material manifestation, what's got to do with me? I need to eat three times a day and live my life, and you know, what's this question? It has no relevance to me whatsoever. We don't find this kind of thing discussed in the newspapers. Well, we might think that, why is Arjuna asking this? What's the relevance to Arjuna? Yeah, you might think that he would ask Krishna that, you know, what is the method to overcome the enemies in the battle. You're a great fighter, Krishna, so tell me and remind me of some of your skills. And that's practical, isn't it? He was about to fight a battle. So often people bring this to us, that, you know, what's that got to do with me? I've got real things to worry about. I'm concerned with the real world. But Arjuna was asking these questions on the battlefield. He was in a pressing situation. I know that means a pressing situation. And we go on in the next verse. Ultimately, the questions come to prayana kale chakatam geyosi niyatatma dihi. That how can, at the time of death, how can the adiyagya, the Lord of sacrifice, how can it be understood? Niyatatma dihi means those who live ordered, controlled lives. It's not a subject for understanding for people whose lives and minds are not controlled. Either not regulated. So even though Arjuna was in this situation, a highly pressing situation, he was concerned with ultimate reality. Arjuna's question was not simply about whether to fight or not fight. That was the question, to fight or not to fight. But the level on which Arjuna was asking the question was, it was on the level of what is my ultimate duty. And therefore, Krishna explained it to him. To understand this, it's we have to understand what is our existential position. What is going on in the world and beyond this world, and where do I fit in? So it may seem that reality is, the whole of reality is concerned with filling my belly three times a day and that of my family members. That is one level of perception of reality. Anamai, pranamai, that's the low level. The level of I, me and mine. Ahambhamiti. So, Krishna is explaining and Arjuna is asking, going deeper to understand this properly. Arjuna wasn't the kind of, you hear stories of people in the modern age, they get a machine gun and they just go and shoot a bunch of people. This is the soldiers in the modern war. That there was that one Croatian devotee, you remember? His mind was very disturbed. He was telling, his mind was very disturbed because in the war he used to go into villages and with a machine gun and just kick down the door and just shoot everyone there. Just man, woman, child, dog, everything. Or maybe, he's not sure. Anyway, he died. So Arjuna wasn't that kind of, this kind of very gross fight. He was a very highly principled person. He wasn't, you see, to get people to fight, you say, come on, man, we gotta smash those, we gotta defend the country, and this is how you motivate people to fight. What is it that makes a man will, just like, there are so many examples, that D-Day is very famous in Britain, how they, there are so many soldiers, the British and American soldiers in Normandy, in northern France, they were charging into machine gun fire. Now, how do you motivate people to run towards people shooting you with machine guns? So people have the idea, it's glorious for our country. So, but Arjuna, he wasn't on such a base or foolish level. He really wanted to know what's right, and he was prepared to fight fully. If he thought it was right. Otherwise, he was not at all prepared to fight. So sometimes people may interpret, well, Bhagavad Gita, it's like the forces of good and the forces of evil, like this. But it is, it's a question of actually what is correct for us to do. But it's not allegorical, it's very specific. In the purport of the very first verse, Srila Prabhupada points out that how some foolish people, they say that, what is it, Kurukshetra represents the body and the five Pandavas, they represent the five senses. That's Mahatma Gandhi, actually, that's his foolish interpretation. But it's not allegorical. Yes, it's a discussion of what is right and what is wrong, but Krishna is a person, he is the supreme person, and right is to surrender to him, and wrong isn't. That's the point. Arjuna and Krishna are not mythological people. They say that Vyasadeva is also mythological. Then who wrote all of this? Mahabharata and Puranas. So, all these questions are relevant to every person in every time and place and circumstance. Even in the most pressing of circumstances, this understanding has to be retained. Often we hear people, even sometimes devotees, say that, you know, well, that's all right, but you know, we have our real life problems to deal with. There's a misunderstanding that philosophy is for idle people or rich people, and for most people, the reality is that you just have to work hard. But actually, philosophy is required for every person. We're not really people, we're not really humans in the full sense, unless we ask these questions. Arjuna's question here, King Tad Brahma, what is Brahma? What is the ultimate truth? That question qualifies one as a human being. Atato Brahma Jignasa. This human life begins with inquiry into ultimate reality. So without asking these questions, one may be very busy running here and there, but he's not fulfilling the purpose of human life. Without asking these questions and getting the proper replies, one cannot come above the level of the animals. That working hard and earning money to fill the belly and just completely absorbed in material desires without understanding that I'm eternal spirit soul. So this Bhagavad Gita is relevant to every person in every time and every place, and it's just another phase of Maya to think that it's not relevant. Now, as Srila Prabhupada has mentioned, this Krishna conscious world is meant for preaching Bhagavad Gita, this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita as it is all over the world. So what is that? Is that another sectarian religious movement? As some people are pushing the Bible, some people are pushing the Quran, we shall push the Bhagavad Gita and make some rivalry with them. When Srila Prabhupada visited Gainesville in Florida, there was some interview on TV there. So the interviewer was trying to press Prabhupada and trying to make him look like some sectarian. He was trying to... They're very expert, these people, in asking questions, and they want to make people look bad. I'm saying, oh, what's your purpose in coming here? People are already... They're already Christians. Already this religion, this has been followed by the people of this culture for hundreds and thousands of years. Why come and preach something else? So Prabhupada explained that it's not a question of being in competition with any religion, but we want to give actual knowledge of who is God, who are we, and what is our relationship. As Srila Prabhupada notes in the introduction to his Bhagavad Gita as it is, that here in this Bhagavad Gita as it is, we'll find all that is in all the different religious books of the world and more. Because actually, not only Bible, Quran, but even in all the Puranas, you won't find the very clearly delineated knowledge of who are we, who is God, what is our relationship, who are the demigods, what is Brahman. It's all there, concentrated in Bhagavad Gita. Even in the Vedas, you say that's where Tridunya Vishayaveda. The Vedas are mostly concerned with Karmakanda, which is just, it's not spiritual knowledge. And then the Vedas, when you Atato Brahma Jignasa, one inquires into Brahman. This is the first sutra of Vedanta Sutra. So sometimes this is understood to mean, or some commentators have said, that when one is realizes that the Karmakanda section of the Vedas is that we have to go beyond this, then we come to the Jnanakanda. So that is called Vedanta, or the ultimate knowledge of the Vedas. Vedanta means the Upanishads. What we often say Vedanta, we think of Vedanta Sutra, but actually it means Upanishads, and Vedanta Sutra is the explanation of that. But it's mostly in very abstruse language. indirect, subtle, and it doesn't clearly delineate the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yadadvaitam Ramopanishadi, the prayer describing or glorification of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, says that what is described in the Upanishads is generally understood as the impersonal understanding of Brahman. So Bhagavad Gita serves the same purpose as Vedanta Sutra. It's Gita Upanishad. All of these questions of Arjuna, King Tad Brahma, King Adhyatma, King Karma, Purushottama, what is Brahma, what is the Adhyatma, I mean this very term, this is Upanishad, it's very highly philosophical language. Karma, what is the understanding of this term? It seems a very simple term, but it's actually so much deep philosophy behind understanding what is karma. So this is everything is summarized here in Bhagavad Gita. And brings us to, Bhagavad Gita also, spoken by Bhagavan, Purushottama, the Supreme Lord, brings us to the conclusion of understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Bhagavad Gita is often misunderstood by impersonals who are accustomed to understanding the message of the Upanishads in an impersonalistic way. So they see the same language and the same concepts in Bhagavad Gita, but they also see discussion of the Supreme Lord and Bhakti, which they think, well, that's more like Puranic discussion. That's the kind of thing that's discussed in the Puranas about bhakti. That's for less intelligent people. So they think, oh, the Bhagavad Gita is wonderful. It has brought together the Upanishadic and Puranic concepts, and then you see, then you do bhakti to the Supreme Lord, and then ultimately you understand everything is all one. Because due to their misfortune, they're envious of Krishna, they're fixed in this impersonalistic way of thinking. When they see the King Tad Brahma, what is Adhyatma, what is Adiyangya, Adibhuta, Adida, and they think, oh, this is all the same. This is all impersonal. And they're not able, because they're not able to hear as Arjuna heard, they're not able to be taken as Krishna took Arjuna. From these concepts lead automatically to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead and our relationship with Him. They're not able to follow that. So they start off with a preconception that they already know what the conclusion is, and therefore they miss the conclusion. They are unable to understand how all this high philosophical discussion, the conclusion is manmana bhavad bhakto madhyati mam namaskar, that we should bow down to Krishna. It seems that's bowing down to Krishna, that's for very simple people, and we have this very high philosophy. They are unable to appreciate that what is the greatness of bowing down to Krishna. They think that by understanding this philosophy, you become very great, you become Brahman. They see people bowing down to deities and they think this is a very low level, asking for some benediction for the deity from the deity. It's on a very low level. You become a higher level, then you become more than the deity yourself. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he gave the key to understanding Bhagavad Gita and all the Shastras. Trinagapi Sunicha Yatta Rorani Sunishana Amanida Amanadeha Kirtaniya Sadahani. One should have the feeling that I'm lower than grass, one should be more tolerant than a tree, then one should be ready to offer respects to others, not desire respect for oneself. And in this mood, one can actually chant the holy names of Krishna. One cannot actually chant unless one has this mood. One who is chanting Hare Krishna, thinking, I'm so great, I'm so wonderful, I'm senior, I'm superior. That chanting is not chanting That is not Krishna Kirtan. That is simply inflating one's false ego and taking one further away from Krishna. So those who have not understood or accepted this principle, then just like the Mayavadis, they're simply, all their spiritual life is simply inflating their false ego. So this key Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given, easy to say. It's very difficult to have this book because we are practiced to thinking in a different way. But unless we can adopt this, then we remain outside devotional service. We don't really understand anything about it at all. Even we can learn shlokas and discuss philosophy as if we understand it. But real understanding is manifest in those who are becoming this, free from the egotism of thinking, I am very great. That's why we see people come to devotional service with so many strange ideas. I've seen many times people, they want to get initiated because they'll think, well, then the others will think I'm important. Now I'm not initiated. When I get initiated, then I'll be important. And now I'm initiated, now I have to get Brahmin initiated, and then I'll be more important. No idea what actual initiation is. And even they get initiated, actually they're never really initiated at all. Because Diksha means Divyam Jnanam Yathodadya, the transmission of divine knowledge. So I said, well, yeah, I know so many shlokas. I can explain, I give good class, and people are appreciating and say, oh, you give very nice class. But if one is, by all these activities, if one is simply feeding one's sense of prestige, then it means he never even began bhakti, or what it means to be a disciple. I was hearing Tamal Krishna Maharaj explaining something about the Buddhist gurus. Of course, they don't know what they're doing, but how severely they treated their disciples. He was explaining how there was one guru, he told his disciples, now you build this house, build it. So he built it up to 3 stories, all by himself. He said, now you break it down. Didn't explain anything about spiritual, so-called spiritual knowledge, just build this house, that's all. And then before it was finished, break it all down. No explanation of why. And then build it again. And then break it again. And then again. So many things he put him through. Then after, you know, a few years of this, he said that, I'm just preparing you, because when you really have to enter into spiritual discipline, then you have to be, you have far more difficult things to do than this. So that idea is there, that the disciple should be fully surrendered, just do whatever he's told to do, without any egoism or personal plans. We don't ask people to do stupid things like build their house and break it down again. That's meaningless, but then Buddhism is, the whole philosophy is philosophy of meaninglessness. Nirartavadam, philosophy of meaninglessness. So, but the principle is there, that one should be prepared to follow and accept discipline, difficulties. But we don't build a house and break it. Do something meaningful in the service of Krishna. Of course, as I was saying this morning, that we're following the Pancharatric system, not the Vedic system. When I say we're not following the Vedic system, that means... It's not that it's non-Vedic, but we follow the Pancharatra section of the broader Vedic literature. Because if we see, just like listed in Hari Bhakti Vilas, what are the qualifications to be a disciple? Well, there wouldn't be any disciples if you had to fulfill all of them. You had to be practically pure devotee to be a disciple. But the Pancharatric system is that if they're seen there's some sincerity, they don't give them a chance. As Srila Prabhupada explained, that normally the system is that you become qualified and then you are given the post. First you're trained and then you become a judge. But our system is that we give you the post and we train you on the job. You come up to the standard. So it is very important to understand. It's not that you get initiated, oh, now I'm already there. Now I'm already perfect. That means you're recognized as a student. It doesn't mean that you're now your Bhagavan. First qualification, disciple. The shishya means shishya. They should accept discipline. So Arjuna, he was qualified to hear Bhagavad Gita because he fulfilled the three conditions: pranipat, pariprashna, seva. He was fully surrendered to Krishna. He was in a mood of submission. Yes. I accept you as an authority. Then asking relevant questions. So many people come and the only thing they ask is for blessings for their child to pass his examination. And then Arjuna, he's ready to serve Krishna. It's not just that he's asking questions and, oh, okay, all right, that's your opinion. He wants to serve. He wants to do what is right. He wants to act pass his life in a way that is proper way of doing. Arjuna was in the mood of seva, thinking, he wasn't just thinking what's good for me, but he was thinking what is the best thing I can do for the whole of human society, to fight or not to fight. Unfortunately, the modern idea of getting a guru is just very shallow. There's just a show of making some obeisance. There's either no discussion of philosophy, or they just discuss some, or they discuss it in a very superficial way. Without the desire to understand what is the actual truth. And for seva, they think, yeah, we'll build a big ashram for our guru, and then everyone will respect him, and I'll be a senior disciple, and then they'll respect me. I'm a member of a big institution and I have a big position. I'm a senior disciple, I'm a committee member. So in this way people become disciples, and what's going on is they're inflating the so-called guru's false ego and then inflating their own false ego, and it's absolutely nothing to do with spiritual life whatsoever. Trinagapi Sunha. Sorry, you didn't finish?
You finished.
Trinagapi Sunichana. This is, it's just unimaginable for the materialists. And even if we go through the motions of devotional, so we do, we get up in the morning, we go, we chant, and we do our service and this and that, but unless we're really cultivating this mood of surrender, humility, then we don't really go anywhere. It's rowing the boat, but we forgot to untie it from the post. So we're rowing, 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 and going on. So these are all very complex and deep topics which Krishna deals with summarily in this chapter. Just Arjuna asks one-line questions and Krishna gives one-line answers. So actually it's very, very deep topics. But the one question which Krishna doesn't give a one-line answer to, which he dedicates most of the chapter to, is Arjuna's last question in this series of questions in two verses. Prayana kale chakatam geyo simi atatmabihi. This is the really important question, how to remember Krishna at the time of death. So that has to be cultivated throughout life. In this chapter, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada again and again and again quotes Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This is the way to remember. This is the solution. So this chanting, the whole spiritual life is perfect. Everything is taken care of by this chanting. What is the meaning of this chanting? O Krishna, O energy of Krishna, please engage me in your service. Very simple, but that the proper adjustment of consciousness to understand what this means. Srila Prabhupada, he he taught what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught, just chant Hare Krishna and everything will be perfect. And then why so many books? Why was Prabhupada busy writing so many books? If just chant Hare Krishna, then why, what's the need of so many books? Because we have to learn how to chant Hare Krishna. Because bahu janma kare jadi shravan kirtan prabhuta na paye Krishna pade prenda. We may be apparently chanting Hare Krishna, but we don't get the effect, even in many lifetimes. We don't get the point of what it means to pray to Krishna to be. If we don't get the point of what it means to be engaged in Krishna's service, then our chanting will be like the, just like gramophone record. You can make the you can make this wind up. You see, they used to have this wind up machine, and you wind it up, and it ding ding ding, make some noise. So the machine can make the sound, but the machine doesn't become purified because it's dull. There's no consciousness. So if there's no consciousness of pleasing Krishna, then that chanting will not be recognized by Krishna. Sharanga sharanagati hoive jaha ta pratanashune shinanda kuma. Who is cultivating the six aspects of sharanagati, surrender, that prayer, the person who is cultivating that, the prayer of such a person is heard by Krishna. So that praying hum, which may not be had, bahu janma kare jadi shravan kirtan prabhuta na paye Krishna pade prenda, that wealth of love of Krishna, which may not be had even after many lifetimes of so-called chanting, how to get that, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained. Harshi Prabhu kahe shuno shuru ram rai ki bhave nama loyale prema upajaya. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, smiling, said to Surup Damodar Ramananda Rai, now you just listen, what is the method of chanting that praying becomes, arises? Chunada pisa nechayana. This is what he said. Tarara pisa shamanana manana kirtanya sadhani. This way, if we chant, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, then love of Krishna will arise in the heart. So all these books are meant to get this point, to understand all this point with a humble servant. All these services one is engaged in, they're meant for cultivating this sincere, humble serving mode. That will make everything successful. Any question on this?
The six types of the Sarnagati, the six types, is it that like grass we are humble and tolerant like tree? So Sarnagati, the six types of Krishna here.
So not six types, but there are six aspects of Sarnagati. You don't know what these are? You should learn. Otherwise, how are you going to do it? Isn't it? If we don't know what it is, then how can we even try to do it? So we should know what these are. This is listed, these six are listed in a verse which is included in Sri Hari Bhakti Vilas and quoted in Srila Prabhupada's purport to Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 18, text 66, which describes that we should surrender to Krishna. Mame kam sharanam vrata. So there are not six types of sharanagati, there are six aspects, and all of them have to be there. Not that you just choose one. There are nine principal processes of devotional service. Shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, svaranam, padha, sevanam, arshanam, vandanam, dasyam, sakyam, apa, nivedanam. Now one can perform any one of these processes and achieve perfection. But to achieve perfection in any of them, the Sharanagati must be there, all six aspects. It's not that just you can take one and forget the others. Sharanagati means the path of taking shelter of Krishna, or surrendering to Krishna. So those six aspects are anukulyasya sankalpa, to make a firm resolve to only do that, say that, think that, which is favorable for the service of Krishna. And pratikul yasya bharjanam, everything which is detrimental to developing love of Krishna, must be given up. Rakshishatiti vishvasa, to trust Krishna, that Krishna is protecting me. And gopritve varanam tata, that Krishna is maintaining me. Atmanikshepa means to fully give ourselves to Krishna. And karpanye, in a mood of full humility, considering myself very low. So let us try to understand what this is. Otherwise, we may be doing the processes of devotional service, but we won't really enter into what that is. Ultimately, that what we do, it's not a matter of, you know, what we do. I gave 5 lakhs, so much money I gave, or I distributed so many books, or I built such a big temple. Ultimately, none of these things matter. What matters is that Krishna is pleased with us. You can build a 5,000 crore temple that might not please Krishna, because for Krishna it's like a drop of sand. Krishna can make billions and trillions. He's already got all the best temples and palaces. If the mood is not there of wanting to please Krishna, then Krishna won't be pleased. There's so many examples. Prabhupada, he would just, when he saw a disciple was becoming puffed up, he wouldn't recognize him at all. Literally, one devotee, Hari Vilas Prabhu, was saying that Prabhupada, he had arrived at the temple in Paris, and he came a little late. He was organizing something. Hari Vilas Prabhu. So he was describing, I was thinking, I'm the temple president, I'm very important. So he walked right in, walked right up to the front and sat next to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada didn't look at him. And one devotee was introducing all the devotees to Prabhupada. Oh, this devotee, he's doing this service, and Prabhupada saying, oh, that's very good. He was saying something about each devotee, thank you very much. And then he came to Haribad, this is Haribad, who was our temple president. Prabhupada still didn't look at him or say anything. Just didn't look at it. There's so many instances like this that Gurudas Prabhu was telling that he was thinking, he's probably giving him some service to do, to go to some place and do something. And just as he was going, he walked into Prabhupada's room and said, oh, now I'm leaving, Prabhupada. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going. Prabhupada just didn't say anything, didn't look at him, just turned around and went in the toilet. So Prabhupada was pleased when devotees performed services. He was very pleased when they did that in a surrendered mood. But however big the service they might be doing, if Prabhupada detected that they were doing that to inflate their own false ego, he just wouldn't reciprocate with that at all. Prabhupada was so kind that he didn't assist people in their attempts to go to hell, because that's ultimately what happens. And we've seen it so many times that people in the name of bhakti just cut their own throats, that they start to think, I'm big, I'm important, and then they think they're superior to others, and then eventually, just by their offenses, their whole devotion is spoiled. So let us try to understand what is Sharanagati, not just in an academic way, but in our lives, in every moment of our lives. So you please learn this. No one should get initiated without knowing this. They should all know what are these 6 points. In the Gaudiya Math, at least at the time of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, even if people were not educated, at that time most people were not, they weren't educated, but they had to know the basic points of the philosophy. Amnaya Prahatava, and they may not even know the verse, but they had to know these principles. What are the basic points? The Amnaya Prahatava, that the spiritual knowledge is received through the chain of disciplic succession, which is based on Shastric knowledge. That's the first point. Of course, there's no difference. So that's the pramana, is the Guru Sadhu Shastra. And then 9 points, prameya, what are the points which they are described? That Hari, Lord Krishna, is supreme. And he is Sarva Shaktim, he is replete with all energies. And Rasadhim, he is an ocean of rasa. Tadvibhinam Shamasa Jivam. The Jiva is his separated part and parcel. That is the English translation of that. And the Jiva can be in two states. Prakrite Kavalitam, he can be in Maya. Or Tadvimukta, he can be free from that also. So, and then, what is that? The sadhana is shuddha. The sadhana is shuddha bhakti, the process for developing Krishna consciousness. One should follow this process. And then by doing that, one develops love of Krishna. Sadhyam tatpriti. So at least one should understand these basic points. What is sharanagati? Otherwise, we don't go anywhere. We don't know where we're going. How are we going to go there? Speak in the mic so everyone can hear. Speak into the mic.
Hare Krishna. How to practice this Jnanabhati position? Sometimes we are thinking that we are practicing this Jnanabhati position, and then like we are finding that we have more ego than one.
Say it in Tamil also. You don't know Tamil? Therefore we have to hear regularly and accept the discipline of being a humble servant. If we make the endeavor to go down, that let me be a humble servant, then the Vaishnavas from the higher platform will lift us up. If we try to go up and think that I should stand on the Vaishnavas' heads, then Maya will kick us down. We should hear and understand this. Hear again and again and again.